I once happened to exist for a period of several months in the capital of this community, the city of St. Petersburg. During my stay, I became acquainted with an elderly couple. The husband was what is called a senator, and his wife was a member of high society and a patroness of several charitable organizations. I often used to visit them and enjoyed playing chess with the senator, a customary pastime there among what are called respectable people. This elderly couple had several daughters. All the older daughters were already settled, that is, married. Only the youngest, who was 12 years old, remained at home. As this couple had no further responsibilities toward their other daughters, they decided to give this youngest daughter of theirs the best possible education, according to the notions of the time. And for this purpose they sent her to a special boarding school, a higher educational establishment called an institute. She came home only on Sundays and holidays, and regularly, once a week, her father and mother used to visit her at the boarding school. As I almost always spent Sundays and holidays with them, I met this charming, as yet unspoiled girl, and sometimes took walks with her in the neighboring park. During these walks, we sometimes joked, and sometimes she told me about her lessons and her new impressions. These meetings and conversations, little by little, established a tie between us, something like friendship. She was very alert in her perceptions and manifestations, or, as your favorites themselves describe such persons, she was a lively and intelligent girl. One day, my acquaintance, the senator, was sent on an inspection tour somewhere far off in Siberia. His wife wished to accompany him, as the senator was suffering from what is called liver trouble, and required constant care. But she could not go with him, because there would be no one to keep an eye on their youngest daughter. So, one morning, the parents, these elderly friends of mine, came to see me at my apartment, and asked whether I would agree to take their place with their youngest daughter during their absence, that is, to visit her every week at the institute, and to bring her home with me for the holidays. Of course, I at once agreed to their proposal. Soon afterward, the senator and his wife left for Siberia, and I began punctiliously fulfilling the obligations taken upon myself toward their daughter, who by that time had become a pet of mine. On my first visit to this establishment, specially created for the education of children, I noticed something strange that served as one of the causes of my subsequent observations and studies of the consequences for your contemporary favorites of that evil mischief they invented themselves. On the day of my visit to this genteel establishment, as they say, there were many visitors in the reception room that was reserved for the meetings of the parents or guardians with their children or wards. Several parents had just come in, others were already talking with their children, and still others sat waiting with all their attention fixed on the door through which the pupils of the establishment usually entered. After I came into this reception room and explained to the inspectress on duty who it was I wished to see, I too sat down to wait for my chance foster child. Meanwhile, I looked around. All of the pupils of this genteel establishment were dressed alike, and all wore their hair alike in two braids hanging down their backs, each one tied at the end with a ribbon. What caught my eye was a certain peculiarity in these ribbons and braids. On some of the pupils the ribbons simply hung down their backs, but on others the ends of these ribbons were tied together in a certain way. On the very next holiday, when I brought my adopted child home, talking at tea in front of the samovar, I asked her, "Sonia, please tell me, why did the pupils of your institute, although they dress alike in everything else, have that peculiar difference in the ends of their braids?" She immediately blushed and kept silent, pensively gazing into her tea. Then, after a certain time, replied nervously, "It's not just a simple thing with us. Although it is our big institute secret, I cannot help telling you about it, as you are my friend, and I am absolutely sure that you will not give out our big secret to anybody." And she frankly told me the following. The way we tie our ribbons was invented on purpose by the pupils so that they could recognize one another. that is, know to which club a pupil belongs. Without the teachers or inspectresses, or anyone who is not a pupil of the Institute, knowing or suspecting the secret. All of the pupils of our Institute are divided into two categories. One category is what is called the men's club, and the other the women's club, and we recognize one another by the way we tie our ribbons. And she went on to explain to me very specifically just what the difference was between these two clubs. She said that, as a rule, all new arrivals at the Institute were at first members of the women's club, and only later, if any pupil proved to be daring toward the teachers, or in general showed herself very active in some way or other, then, by the common consent of all the pupils, she was enrolled as a member of the men's club, and from that moment on tied the ends of the ribbons of her two braids together. Our clubs sometimes meet in an empty classroom or dormitory, but more often in the lavatories. A member of the men's club has the following privileges. She has the right to choose and order about as many as she likes of the members of the women's club, and these latter are obliged to obey every whim of this member of the men's club, and to do their utmost to make life in our boarding school easy for her. For example, make her bed in the mornings, copy her lessons, share with her the presents coming from home, and so on and so forth. The chief occupation in the clubs consists of reading together forbidden books procured by one of the pupils, principally one very rare manuscript bought with money raised by general subscription. This manuscript expounds in detail the whole of the teaching of the famous poetess Sappho. I must tell you, my boy, that Sappho is the name of a certain Greek poetess who was the first to discover there on your planet the way to real happiness for innumerable women of the Greco-Roman as well as of the contemporary civilization. This great creator of women's happiness had her dwelling place on the island of Lesbos, and the name of this island was the origin of the title of those women who have become worthy to understand and carry out during the process of their existence the teaching of this remarkable woman, and who at the present time are called lesbians. This adopted child of mine, who had by chance become my initiator into the subtleties of the psyche of the beings of the female sex on your planet, further explained to me that each pupil of the Institute, who was a member of the men's club, could choose for herself as many partners as she wished for the common pastime, this, of course, being carried out in full accord with the teachings of the poetess Sappho. Thanks to this one fact I have just related, out of thousands of other observations of mine, I think you will clearly understand that this monstrous phenomenon could not exist among the rising generation if the notion were not prevalent that it is exceedingly indecent to talk to children about the question of sex. This notion of decency has come down to contemporary civilization as a heritage from the beings of the epoch called the Middle Ages. These candidates for Hasnamuses of the Middle Ages, who were the chief destroyers of the real meaning of the teaching of the divine teacher Jesus Christ, also devised and introduced as a rule of everyday existence the invention called bon ton. And this maleficent invention became so strongly rooted in the psyche of the majority from generation to generation that now your favorites, who have become completely weak-willed, are unable, however hard they try, to give up this abnormal psychic fixation, that is, the notion that it is indecent to talk to their children about the question of sex. What? Talk to one's children about sex? Is that not indecent? The only things that the people of contemporary civilization teach their children are the inventions collected by various candidates for Hasnamus individuals in their manuals under the title of bon ton. And since all these manuals say that it is very indecent to talk about the sex question, and in the case of children, actually immoral, contemporary people, even if they see their favorite son or daughter going to rot, simply cannot, and despite their mental wish, dare not, explain frankly to their children the harmfulness and sin of these criminal habits.